Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Frances Alonso reporting. Nigerian President-elect Muhammadu Buhari says his country has embraced democracy and put one-party rule behind it.
This was a hard-fought contest. Emotions were high. We must not allow them to get the better of us. This is not the time for confrontation. This is a moment that we must begin to heal the wounds and work toward a better future.
Mr. Buhari spoke Wednesday in Abuja just hours after the Nigeria's Electoral Commission declared him the official winner of the presidential election. Meanwhile, foreign leaders are praising the two leaders and Nigerians in general for holding a peaceful vote. Delegates to a UN special session are urging a more vigorous global response to stop the terrorist threat posed by the militant Nigerian group Boko Haram. Lisa Schlein reports.
UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Zeid Ra'ad Al Hussein said the appalling atrocities committed by Boko Haram have created a human rights crisis, resulting in at least 15,000 deaths since 2009 in northern Nigeria and the Lake Chad region.
Countless more children, women, and men have been abducted, abused, and forcibly recruited, and women and girls have been targeted for particularly horrific abuse, including sexual enslavement. Boko Haram's leaders must know that they will be held accountable in a court of law for these appalling violations of human rights.
Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And militants from the Islamic State Jihadist group had seized control of most of the Yarmouk Palestinian refugees camp in Damascus. VOA News. As the negotiation over Iran's reported nuclear weapons program were extended into Wednesday, Israel's prime minister and the leader of the Republican-led U.S. House of Representatives have reiterated their opposition to the deal being negotiated. VOA's Scott Bob reports.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu publicly welcomed U.S. House of Representatives Speaker John Boehner, who is visiting the Middle East with a delegation of U.S. congressmen. Neither leader spoke directly about the Iranian nuclear negotiations headlining news around the world. The Israeli leader highlighted what he sees as a threat to the values of democracy and freedom espoused by the two countries.
The Middle East is plagued by anti-Western, anti-democratic, and anti-American extremism.
The prime minister avoided mentioning any country by name, but an hour before meeting the U.S. delegation, he told journalists any concessions to Iran would ensure a bad deal that would endanger Israel, the Middle East, and the peace of the world. Scott Bob, VOA News, Jerusalem.
Negotiators from Iran and the group of six world powers continued working Wednesday to close the remaining gaps in their long-sought effort to reach a framework agreement on curbing Iran's nuclear program in exchange for sanctions relief. The two sides missed their self-imposed Tuesday deadline, but agreed to keep talking in a process that resumed Wednesday in Lausanne, Switzerland. Iraqi forces battled Islamic State fighters for control of the last remaining pockets in the strategic city of Tikrit in a bid to finish their weeks-long effort to retake the city that militants have controlled since June. A government official in Tikrit told VOA's Kurdish service he expects Iraqi forces to completely retake the city within hours. The Palestinian Authority became a member of the International Criminal Court Wednesday, saying it wanted justice, not vengeance, for alleged Israeli war crimes. Joining the court is part of a broader effort by the Palestinians to put international pressure on Israel and comes at a time when the chances of resuming negotiations on Palestinian statehood are seen slim after the re-election of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Meanwhile, Human Rights Watch welcomed the Palestinian Authority as the court's 123rd member. The chief executive of the German airline Lufthansa said it'll take a long time to determine exactly what happened in last week's deadly crash of the jetliner that crashed in the Alps.
We are sorry for the losses that occurred, and there's just no words to express this, and I try to express at least the words of thanks, as I did today, to those who have helped us here.
Again, that is Karsten Spohr speaking Wednesday at the crash site in the Alps. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight,
the unity, stability and progress of our dear country is more important than anything else.
That's VOA's Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan conceding defeat in yesterday's national elections.
Also in the news, President Obama has congratulated Nigerian President-elect Buhari and the Nigerian people following the outcome of the presidential elections. And Niger's President Muhammadu Issoufou says the end is near for Nigeria's militant group, Boko Haram.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Nigeria, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, Nigeria woke up to a new president-elect today, Muhammadu Buhari. But people say democracy is the real winner as the country embarks on its first peaceful handover of power since the end of military rule in 1999. VOA's Anluk reports from Abuja.
Celebrations erupted before final results were even announced. It was game over for the People's Democratic Party, which has monopolized Nigerian politics for 16 years. President Goodluck Jonathan conceded and called for peace.
The unity, stability, and progress of our dear country is more important than anything else.
Mr. Buhari saluted his opponent's statesmanship and congratulated Nigerians. One-party rule is over, he said.
We have proven to the world that we are people who have embraced democracy and are people who seek a government, who seek a government by for.
The fourth time was the charm for this ex-military ruler and longtime presidential candidate. The vote is being praised as Nigeria's freest and most transparent yet, despite logistical delays and technical issues at the polls. The opposition united in 2013, forming the All Progressives Congress. The party pledged change amid unfettered corruption, near constant power cuts, and a sinking oil-dependent economy. APC supporters started gathering at party headquarters Tuesday in Abuja, waiting for Mr. Buhari as results were being announced.
He will turn the country around, we know that, but it's going to take time because the country is in a state of complete decay. So we are not under any illusion that there is a miracle going to happen straight away.
As Mr. Buhari takes office, the Boko Haram insurgency rages on in the northeast. It intensified dramatically on Mr. Jonathan's watch. Thousands of civilians have been killed, more than a million displaced. Borno State has been the most affected. That state's results were the last to come in. A new era is about to be born, tweeted one Nigerian. The APC dominated the north in this vote and scored key victories in the southwest, a stark change from the last PDP win in 2011. Kano, the largest city in the north, partied into the night. People cheered as drivers spun their cars around a roundabout. There was giddiness and a sense of empowerment in the streets. People danced. They jumped up and down. In Abuja, they chanted and sang Father, Father, in Hausa. But they also said they want results, and they will let Mr. Buhari know how he's doing in 4 years at the next election. And look, VOA News, Abuja.
Thank you, Anne. VOA's Peter Cloti is also in Abuja, and he gave me an update on Nigeria's reaction today.
Well, at 2 p.m. this afternoon, at Nigeria time, the chairman of the Independent National Electoral Commission, Professor Tayo Jiga, will officially present a certificate to the president-elect, General Muhammadu Buhari, to officially, as part of the process, make him the duly elected president of Nigeria. That completes the electoral process with the presentation of the certificate of win to President-elect General Buhari this afternoon at the International Conference Center in Abuja.
And Peter, what is the mood now on the ground with people? What are people saying about this election and the win of Buhari?
Well, supporters of General Buhari have been celebrating since early this morning when he was declared winner of the presidential election. And you could hear the chant of Shai Buhari or Say Buhari, whatever they called it, meaning that there is only one Buhari, and they were praising him. A lot of people say that they were pleased with how the election was conducted in a free, fair, and transparent manner. And that was the same conclusion reached by international poll observers. However, supporters of the PDP, the outgoing ruling party, are displeased with some of the results that came from Katsina, Kaduna, and other parts of the north. They thought that there were inconsistencies and voter irregularities and underage voting. Currently, the situation in the capital is quiet, despite the fact that yesterday it was really, really tense because nobody knew what was going to happen. But when reports came that President Goodluck Jonathan had called to officially congratulate General Buhari, the tension significantly reduced. The beefed up security at the International Conference Center began dissipating. You know, things went from a very jittery situation to a celebration dance by members of the opposition APC, now elected to run the affairs of this country.
Are you getting any sense from the PDP that they will be doing any type of official challenge to the election?
Yes, I spoke with senior officials of the PDP, including Elder Godsday Peter Orubebe, who actually disrupted proceedings yesterday when the election results were being announced for close to 30 minutes, raising serious concerns about voter irregularities in parts of the north. And the PDP official said that they are planning to officially launch a legal challenge. How that will fare is anybody's guess when General Buhari is duly sworn in by the end of May. So, but they were planning yesterday to launch a legal challenge to contest some of the results from other parts of the country, especially in the northern part of the country where General Buhari has a stronghold.
That's VOA's Peter Cloti. He spoke with me from Abuja.
President Obama has congratulated Nigerian President-elect Buhari and the Nigerian people following the outcome of the presidential elections. He says Nigeria has shown it is dedicated to democratic principles. Mr. Obama commended General Buhari and outgoing President Jonathan for their public commitments to nonviolence. He also praised Mr. Jonathan for placing his country's interest first by conceding the election and congratulated President-elect Buhari. Also, U.S. Department spokesperson Julia Stryker issued a statement yesterday on Nigeria's election.
We congratulate the people of Nigeria who exercised their civic duty by going to the polls. We would especially like to commend the patience voters demonstrated and their commitment to participate in the democratic process. We also have been heartened by the consensus on the part of the independent international observers that the elections were largely free, fair, and transparent, with only isolated disruptions due to violence and technical challenges.
That's U.S. State Department spokesperson Julia Stryker.
Not able to vote in their country's presidential and parliamentary elections, but the Nigerian diaspora have been watching developments in the West African nation very closely as they celebrate their newest leader. VOA's Miriamma Diallo in Washington spoke to a few of them.
We're so happy right now, and I can't even walk right now.
Olayemi Faluzi is an attorney in the Washington, D.C. area. He says he's overjoyed about the results of his country's presidential election. He told VOA, Nigeria's democracy has really matured this week.
This is amazing. I'm elated right now. we were stuck on TV watching it, you know, following it step by step. This is the beginning of a new era, beginning of a new dawn. Basically, what just happened is monumental. It's a big and a very fact that for the past 50 years in our history, the opposition party has never won against an incumbent party.
He was supporting neither President Goodluck Jonathan nor President-elect Muhammadu Buhari, but hopes the new leader can address his two concerns.
I'm very ashamed to be a Nigerian in this day and age, in a country that calls itself the giant of Africa, where we do not have a constant electricity. Electricity is like an air that you breathe in. Your economy cannot grow without that. Number two, trying to make a reduction in corruption. It's very hard to get zero corruption. But if we can reduce it, I will consider his administration a successful administration.
Omolola Adeleosho is the executive director and co-founder of Act for Accountability, an organization that's been very active in the fight against finding the missing Chibok girls in Nigeria.
We are excited because it is the showing of what civil society has actually been able to do, of educating people about their voting rights and seeing a large turnout of people who have been glued and also making sure that their votes did count. It's actually the first time we've actually had a televised count of the electoral vote.
She hopes that moving forward, President-elect Buhari can be held accountable to his campaign promises as well.
And actually, I think that the first thing that they need to do is really take a step back and reassess the rescue of the missing Chibok girls and all the individuals that have been kidnapped by Boko Haram.
Yvonne Idahosa is another lawyer in the U.S. She's also an advocate for the rights of women and girls in Nigeria.
My overwhelming sentiment is one of pride. It's comforting to know that Nigerians have been able to do what a lot of people said could not be done in Nigeria, and which is to have the voice of the people heard.
Idahosa had actually supported the only female candidate in the election and hopes that Mr. Buhari, after he assumes power at the end of May, follows through on what he indicated in his platform by focusing on national security and prioritizing the average Nigerian person and not the elite. In Washington, Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Delegates to a special UN session are urging a more vigorous global response to stop the terrorist threat posed by the militant Nigerian group Boko Haram. They say the group still presents a serious danger despite recent military setbacks. Lisa Schlein reports from the 43-member UN Human Rights Council in Geneva.
In opening the meeting, UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Zaid Raad Al Hussein said the appalling atrocities committed by Boko Haram have created a human rights crisis, resulting in at least 15,000 deaths since 2009 in northern Nigeria and the Lake Chad region.
Countless more children, women, and men have been abducted, abused, and forcibly recruited. And women and girls have been targeted for particularly horrific abuse, including sexual enslavement. This despicable and wanton carnage, which constitutes a clear and urgent menace for development, peace, and security, must be stopped. Boko Haram's leaders must know that they will be held accountable in a court of law for these appalling violations of human rights.
Zaid said intensified incursions by the group into neighboring Cameroon, Chad, and Niger have spread bloodshed and desolation. He said responses to these massive violations must be strong, coordinated, and principled. Former Burundian president and the current high representative of the African Union for Mali and the Sahel, Pierre Boyoya, spoke about AU efforts to combat Boko Haram. Speaking through an interpreter, he said the bloc is seeking to promote cooperation on security because no country alone can face the threat posed by the militants.
This terrorist group is more than a regional threat. It is a global threat. Its recent declaration of allegiance to the Islamic State can only confirm this. Hence, combating this group and its allies must be the goal of the international community as a whole.
Permanent Secretary of Nigeria's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Danjuma Nanpomsheni, called Boko Haram a faceless monster that is a major threat to peace, security, and freedom, though he acknowledged the group has taken a major hit on the battlefield this year.
With the cooperation of the international community, including the four most affected countries, and progress has been achieved. More than four-fifths of the territories seized by Boko Haram were taken within the last 6 weeks.
Ambassador Sheni said the election of a new president in Nigeria and other successes are an indication of what can be achieved when countries work together in the fight against terrorism. The session began with tributes honoring Somalia's ambassador to Switzerland, Yusuf Bari Bari, who was slain Friday in a terrorist attack on a hotel in Mogadishu by al-Shabaab militants. Several speakers expressed regret and sadness at the death of a man they described as a staunch defender of human rights. High Commissioner Zaid decried what he called the senseless death of a good man whose life was cut short by a vicious terrorist attack. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you, Lisa. Niger's President Mahamudu Usufu says the end is near for Nigeria's militant group, Boko Haram. While visiting the U.S., he spoke to VOA's French to Africa service. Usufu says while the group has not been eradicated, it has been greatly weakened following the military support given to Nigeria by Niger, Cameroon, and Chad. The president of Niger calls on the U.N. to give financial and logistical support to countries fighting Boko Haram. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 22 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. President Obama has congratulated Nigerian President-elect Buhari and the Nigerian people following the outcome of the presidential elections. And Niger's president, Mahamudu Isufu, says the end is near for Nigeria's militant group, Boko Haram. And would like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
In Guinea, a presidential spokesman says the refusal of some citizens to accept the existence of Ebola is slowing efforts to end the outbreak. He says the problem has caused health officials to lose a lot of time in the lingering days of the more than year-long outbreak. He says police stationed outside Conakry had recently intercepted two bodies hidden under baggage. He also says families in the town of Koya near Conakry had refused to identify people who had been in contact with an infected person. Meanwhile, at least 12 people believed to have been in contact with an Ebola patient have apparently left the capital suburb of Matoto. Mr. Conde announced on Saturday an emergency measure enabling authorities to restrict movements in Western Guinea in a bid to stem transmission of the disease. In the U.S., five health workers being monitored for the Ebola virus developed no symptoms in 21 days, so they've been released by a Nebraska hospital. They were evacuated from Sierra Leone after having contact with a colleague who contracted the virus. That infected health worker is in fair condition in a Maryland hospital.
A 15-year campaign is being launched to eradicate an often fatal livestock disease. PPR, or small ruminant plague, has spread to 70 countries in Africa. The Middle East and Southeast Asia now pose a threat to Europe. The campaign was announced at an international conference in Ivory Coast's capital, Abidjan. VOA's Jody Capowar reports.
PPR, or peste petite ruminante, primarily attacks sheep and goats. The viral disease was first diagnosed in Abidjan in 1942. Initially, it was called goat plague. The disease causes high fever, rapid emaciation, and respiratory failure. It causes up to $2 billion in animal losses each year. Juan Lubroth is the UN Food and Agriculture Organization's chief veterinary officer.
Well, we see with peste petit ruminant, or PPR, several continents are affected by this disease. And we do see that sheep and goats, or goats at least, are often referred to as the poor person's cow. So if you are a poor farmer or in poor communities, the role of sheep and goats is very, very important.
The FAO says PPR kills up to 90% of the animals it infects if they are not vaccinated. The disease has not posed a risk to human health, but can devastate human livelihoods and affect food security.
With PPR, if we were able to eliminate this threat of a quality product that provides excellent nutrition, vitamins, micronutrients, quality protein to complement crop-based diets, that would be very, very important.
Lubroth says there are similarities between PPR and Rinderpest, the only animal disease to have been eradicated.
The viruses belong to the same family. Some of the tools that were developed for Rinderpest have actually been adapted to be used for peste petit ruminant. Other aspects of the Rinderpest campaign were regional networks that became so important to implement the strategy. Well, the same will be done for peste petit ruminant. So certainly there are a lot of lessons that could be learned from that.
Another lesson, he says, is to have enough funds on hand to start and finish the job. The FAO is joining forces with OIE, the World Organization for Animal Health, in launching the campaign to eradicate PPR. The strategy has three components.
The first one is focused on PPR, sheep and goats, the vaccine, understanding the value chains to be able to target the approach. The second component is looking at strengthening the veterinary services. And the third component looks at other priority diseases that would be important for a country or a region that could be tackled together with PPR.
Representatives of the affected countries, donors, NGOs, and the scientific community are attending the FAO and OIE International Conference for the Control and Eradication of PPR. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
This is Africa News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Yehei Suhib in Washington. It's 28 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
Your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we continue in-depth election coverage as part of Voice of America's Nigeria Decides 2015 special programming. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests as they give post-election analysis on the major issues surrounding the vote and its leader for the next 4 years. That's next time on VOA Africa.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. President Obama has congratulated Nigerian President-elect Buhari and the Nigerian people following the outcome of the presidential elections. And Niger's President Muhammadu Issoufou says the end is near for Nigeria's militant group Boko Haram. Coming up, we'll have music from Nigeria, and in our feature segment, the third part of a series on renewable energy success in Africa. I'm Kim Lewis with Yehia Swuhi, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. It's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. And happy Wednesday, Sunny.
Happy Wednesday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand a Jordanian prince tops your sports report this evening.
Kim, FIFA presidential candidate Prince Ali bin Al Hussein is hoping his visit to Zimbabwe this week will win him some African votes when World Football's governing body holds a big election May 29th in Zurich, Switzerland. The 39-year-old Prince Ali is one of three challengers to incumbent Sepp Blatter for world football's top job. The two others are Michael van Praag, chairman of the Royal Dutch Football Association, and former Portuguese star Luis Figo. All three men are expected to have a difficult time ousting the 79-year-old Blatter, who has been in power since 1998 and who has a strong base of support in Africa. The FIFA boss is credited with delivering the first World Cup to Africa, the 2010 World Cup hosted by South Africa. Now, Africa makes up 54 of the 209 FIFA member countries that will vote on May 29th. In Zimbabwe, Prince Ali stressed Africa's importance in the development of football.
Africa is extremely important. It's such a wonderful continent with so much potential. And for myself, I also come from a country and a region developing in football. So my whole project and platform is to develop and to take our talent and to take it to a world-class level. And that's the reason why I'm here in Africa in particular and why I'm running for FIFA president.
The FIFA presidential candidate's visit to Zimbabwe comes less than 3 weeks after World Football's governing body expelled the country from the 2018 World Cup qualifying competition for failing to pay former Brazilian coach José Claudini Jorginho. Zimbabwe says it will appeal the decision, and you can bet the subject will be brought up in meetings between Prince Ali and top Zimbabwe sports officials. Prince Ali says he's lobbying for support not just from Zimbabwe, but from all of Africa.
Well, I hope that that we get support from all of Africa once they see what I'm about and what I hope for. And, of course, Zimbabwe is a leader in this continent. So I'm looking forward to support from Zimbabwe and from Africa as a whole. I've had discussions with people in FIFA. I've served there after I was elected as vice president for the past 4 years. So I think that it is a good time, and I'm ready for the challenge.
Next week, Prince Ali is scheduled to attend the Confederation of African Football's General Assembly meeting in Cairo. The two other FIFA presidential candidates, Figo and Michael van Praag, are also scheduled to attend the CAF General Assembly, as well as FIFA President Sepp Blatter. So yes, I think there will definitely be some politicking going on next week in the Egyptian capital. If you tuned into Tuesday's Sunny Side of Sports, you heard our African football guru David Legg talk about Nigerian goalkeeper Vincent Enyema making his 100th international appearance. I asked David, how many other African players have reached that 100 cap mark?
On the interesting point, the most capped African, in fact, is Ahmed Hassan, who didn't retire that long ago, Egyptian midfielder. He's got 184 caps. And that's not only, Sonny, an African record, it's actually also a world record. He is the most capped international footballer in history. And I would like to stress that these figures I'm now giving all our listeners to the Sunny Side of Sport are the official FIFA figures. Next after Hassan comes another Egyptian with 169 caps. And it's Hossam Hassan. That was that fiery striker. He scored an awful lot of goals, Sonny, and he also got an awful lot of red cards. A very temperamental figure. And completing an Egyptian hat-trick at the top of the table, so to speak, with 141 caps is that great goalkeeper, Essam El Hadary, still playing at club level, but not anymore for the Pharaohs. 137, you've got Rigobert Song, the dreadlock Cameroon centre-back. 125, you've got Ibrahim Hassan, and he's a twin brother of Hossam Hassan. And just like his twin brother, Sonny, Ibrahim picked up a fair number of red cards in his time. 124 caps for Hani Ramsey of Egypt. 123 caps for the great Didier Sakora of Ivory Coast, another player who recently retired. We're then down to 118, and we've got two Cameroonians, Samuel Eto'o, another person who retired recently, and Jeremy Injetap, a defender. 117, Kolo Touré of Ivory Coast. 115, Nouredine Naibet, a Moroccan defender. 111, Wael Goma, the great Egyptian centre-back. 107, Ahmed El Kass of Egypt, and Aaron Mokoena of South Africa. 106 caps for Joseph Masonda of Zambia. 105 caps for Ahmed Fatmi, and Radi Jaidi. Jaidi played for Tunisia, and Fati for Egypt.
Hi, Didier Drogba, striker from Ivory Coast.
104, Didier Drogba, the great striker, still coming on off the bench occasionally for Chelsea. And Nader El Saeed, the Egyptian goalkeeper. 101, Ahmed Choubier of Egypt, and Elijah Tana of Zambia. And then on 100, Joseph Yobo and Vincent Enyema of Nigeria. And interesting to see, Sonny, of that entire list that I've called out, only Enyema is a currently playing international. And I believe there's many more caps to come from him. He is undoubtedly the best goalkeeper in Africa currently. And he's 32, and of course, goalkeepers can go on much longer than outfield players. He can play, Sonny, for another 3, 4, 5 years for the Super Eagles if he so desires.
Thanks, David. That's our African football guru, David Legg, speaking with us once again from Johannesburg, South Africa. Also in Johannesburg is our Daybreak Africa sportsman, Mark Ouma. And Mark joins us now with more sports news.
We begin with cricket. Namibia beat Kenya by 80 runs to win the ICC Africa 2020 Championships in Benoni, South Africa on Tuesday. In other matches, Ghana pipped Uganda by 5 runs as Botswana beat Tanzania by 35 runs. At the end of the 5-day round-robin contest, Namibia and Kenya topped the log with 8 points each. Namibia edge Kenya with a superior run rate. Uganda are third with 6 points. Ghana has 4. Botswana 2, while Tanzania lost all their matches and have no points. Consequently, Namibia and Kenya progressed to the 2015 World 2020 qualifiers in Ireland and Scotland. At that tournament, the top 6 teams will advance to the 2016 World 2020 Championships in India. Turning to football, 2 goals scored by winger Odair Fortes and defender Gege in the dying minutes of the first half propelled Cape Verde Islands to a surprise 2-0 triumph over their hosts Portugal in a friendly match played in Estoril on Tuesday. Elsewhere, Tunisia held their hosts China to a 1-1 draw in Nanjing. Ghana and Mali drew 1-1 in Paris, France. Iraq pipped the Democratic Republic of Congo by a solitary goal in Sharjah in the United Arab Emirates, while Burkina Faso edged their hosts Morocco 2-1 in Casablanca. Turning to volleyball, Kenya Pipeline dismissed Algerian defending champions GS Petrolia 25-15, 25-21 and 25-21 in the quarterfinals at the Africa Women's Club Volleyball Championships in Cairo, Egypt on Tuesday. In other quarterfinal action, Egypt's Sham outplayed Uganda's Vision 25-17, 25-10 and 25-10. Tunisia's Carthage outplayed Rwanda's Revenue Authorities in straight sets as Egypt's El Ahly outclassed Cameroon's FAP 25-14, 25-17 and 25-22. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Hey, g'day mates, remember me? This is the old sports emperor with a red-hot listening tip. That's right, give a listen to my pal, the bright and lively Sunny Man on the sunny side of sports, right here on the Voice of America.
This is Larry Zamude, Chairman, Chief Executive, Sports Radio 18.9, Brilla FM, Lagos and Abuja, Nigeria. Let's talk to you about Brilla FM. It's Nigeria's only sports station, of course, with partner, that you VOA. And so you can listen to Sunny Side of Sports on 18.9 Brilla FM, Lagos and Abuja. Keep listening, Africa, and enjoy Sunny Side of Sports on Brilla.
Thanks, Larry. And it was great to meet you and your sporty Brilla staff last year in Lagos. In addition to Lagos and Abuja, Larry has Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM stations in Kaduna and Onitsha, Nigeria. And we're delighted to have Brilla as a partner of the Voice of America.
They're playing back.
In National Basketball Association action Wednesday night, the Golden State Warriors beat the Los Angeles Clippers 110-106 in a game between the league's two hottest clubs. Playing in Los Angeles, the Warriors rallied from a 17-point deficit to win their 10th game in a row, and the Clippers saw their seven-game winning streak snapped. Blake Griffin had a game-high 40 points for the Clippers, while All-Star guard Stephen Curry led the Warriors with 27 points. With the NBA's regular season winding down, Golden State improved its league-best record to 61 wins and 13 losses. In Tuesday's three other NBA results, the Brooklyn Nets beat the visiting Indiana Pacers 111-106. The Detroit Pistons clipped the wings of the visiting Atlanta Hawks 105-95. And the defending NBA champion San Antonio Spurs scored an easy 95-81 road victory over the Miami Heat. I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's the sunny side of sports. Back to Yahaeus Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Thank you, Sonny. And listen to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the Sunny Side of Sports at 1730 hours UTC, right here on the Voice of America.
Coming up, the third part of a series on renewable energy success in Africa. And next, 50,000 South Sudanese refugees in Ethiopia relocated to higher grounds due to the coming rainy season. But first, some music. Here is KC Fresh of Nigeria with Everybody Dance.
Everybody dance, yo. Everybody dance, yo.
Casey Fresh of Nigeria with Everybody Dance.
Well, a consortium of international firms is preparing to build in the desert of northern Kenya, Africa's biggest ever renewable energy project. The Lake Turkana Wind Power Project wind farm should produce 300 megawatts of reliable, low-cost electricity to Kenya. That's about 20% of the country's yearly power needs. It will cost about $720 million, the largest private investment in Kenyan history. Darren Taylor reports in the third part of a series on renewable energy success in Africa.
A few years ago, a Dutchman with a dream walked into a government office in Nairobi. In his hand, he carried an application form to lease land near Lake Turkana in northeastern Kenya.
The commissioner of lands himself had never been there, and he didn't know what value to give to this land. And I remember him asking me, would you bring some pictures of this area, please? So we did. We brought him about 20 pictures of the area there, and when he looked at it, he said, what are you going to do there?
Carlo van Wageningen says when he told the state official that he planned to use wind to make electricity in the desert, the land commissioner stared at him as if he was crazy.
You know, and then he looked at me and he said, how much of this land do you want to lease? And I said, 150,000 acres. To that, he replied, would you like 300?
The businessman says the story indicates the perceived worthlessness in Kenya of the country's arid north, a hot and harsh wasteland home to little more than scorpions, a few nomadic groups and their cattle and camels, and powerful winds. In 2005, to gauge its potential for a wind power plant, a renewable energy expert visited the region with van Wageningen.
And he instantly fell in love with it, not only because the wind was constantly blowing, but because the area was deserted. There's no population, so you don't disturb anybody, and there is no wildlife or very little of it. He said, this is really a perfect site. This is actually a wind power developer's dream.
Today, van Wageningen is chairman of Lake Turkana Wind Power, the consortium that's building what will be one of the world's biggest wind energy projects. It's possible because of a natural phenomenon called the Turkana Corridor Jet Stream, a powerful wind that blows off the Indian Ocean through a mountain valley that leads directly to Loyangalani District, the site of the energy project.
This is probably one, if not the best wind site in the world. The wind is consistent. We have no sudden gushes of wind. It is really very irregular. It is very predictable at various times of the day. In
fact, van Wageningen says the exceptional wind will allow his plant to produce electricity at a rate that's unprecedented in the field of wind energy.
We can produce with the same installations about double the power that is normally produced from wind power in Europe. And that means that the cost of that power drops considerably, and that is why we can become a competitive source of power without subsidies. We will be the cheapest source of power after geothermal, but by a very small margin.
The operation will generate clean power and won't pollute the atmosphere. It'll earn about 1 million carbon credits annually from the United Nations. This means that every year the UN will pay the consortium almost $9 million for protecting the environment. Van Wageningen says it will give this money to the Kenyan government.
The government has accepted to devote 100% of that income to the development of the communities in and around our area and along the transmission line route.
Hundreds of millions of dollars are swirling around the massive project, and Kenya has a reputation for being one of the most corrupt places on earth. But van Wageningen insists he's never been approached to pay a bribe to win government support for the project.
The reason why I truly believe that we never received any approach is very likely due to the fact that we are located on the moon. And most Kenyans, I would say up to 80% of Kenyans, don't even know that that is part of Kenya.
He says another reason why corruption syndicates ignored his project is that they were convinced that it would fail.
They all thought in the beginning we were a bunch of lunatics who were going on to an adventure. No one really believed in the project until much later.
But with construction of the wind power plant now backed by powerful international institutions such as the World Bank, its success seems assured. And with it, Africa is about to take a leap towards a future dominated by renewable energy. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
The UN Refugee Agency recently began relocating more than 50,000 South Sudanese refugees in Ethiopia to higher grounds due to the coming rainy season. As VOA fellow Lucy Pony reports, the camps are located in flood-prone areas.
The UNHCR Public Information Officer in Gambela, Suleiman Mamadou, says since South Sudan's conflict erupted at the end of 2013, tens of thousands of South Sudanese fled to the Gambela region, prompting the UNHCR and the Ethiopian government to establish two emergency refugee camps. He says Lake Chor Camp is home to more than 48,000 refugees, while Nip-Nip Camp houses about 3,000 refugees. Last August, the two camps were flooded by heavy rains that caused the Barrow River to burst its banks. Mamadou says they've begun relocating the refugees to avoid a repeat of last year's incident.
The relocation exercise started yesterday with the first group of 377 refugees that left and one of two camps that were flooded last year. As you know, when we had thousands of people fleeing, the camps were established, two camps, Lecho and Nip-Nip. So what we are basically doing now is to relocate about 50,000, more than 50,000 really, refugees from those areas before the next rainy season begins in a couple of weeks.
Mamadou says most refugees are being relocated by road. The more vulnerable and those with special needs are being transported by air. Mamadou says UNHCR has opened a new camp, Jewi, to accommodate the high number of refugees.
All of them cannot fit in one camp. So what happened basically is that one of the smaller camps, the Nip-Nip camp refugees that are there, about nearly 3,000, they will be relocated to Finnish refugee camp, while the larger number, the 48,428 refugees in Lecho camp, they will be relocated to a new site that was relocated over the weekend.
The new camp is located about 18 kilometers from Gambela, the regional capital. Mamadou says the relocation efforts will wrap up the first week of April. He says finding suitable land for relocation has been the agency's greatest challenge in Ethiopia. Since last year's floods, several sites were identified but later declared unsuitable. Mamadou says 60 to 70 South Sudanese refugees continue to trickle into Gambela every day, which means they need more land and more funding.
We need logistics, we need human capital. Therefore, the establishment of this new site has to be cleared. We have to get shelter for them, toilet facilities, water, sanitation, health facilities. So we really need the donors to continue to support the South Sudanese refugees.
Mamadou says some of the refugees want to go home, but they can't because the situation in South Sudan is still so unpredictable. Mamadou says the refugees receive high energy biscuits and water to sustain them for their journey to the next camp. When they arrive, they are given food rations and shelter. UNHCR works with the International Organization for Migration and the Ethiopian government to relocate the refugees. Ethiopia is Africa's largest refugee hosting country with more than 670,000 refugees from Eritrea, Somalia, Sudan and South Sudan. More than 250,000 are South Sudanese refugees, most of whom arrived since the conflict erupted in December 2013. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Washington.
V-
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next is our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiz Ruhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Kwame Afori, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The world is changing, and so is diplomacy and development. Global challenges such as climate change, poverty, terrorism, and disease are often too expansive and complex to be met by any one government or group. Addressing such problems requires innovation, ingenuity, and collaboration across diverse sectors. In 2009, the Secretary's Office of Global Partnerships was established at the U.S. State Department to promote the development of public-private partnerships to leverage the best of public and private sector resources to create practical solutions for such challenges. The office, which has leveraged over $829 million in public and private resources since 2009, engages companies, startups, NGOs, foundations, faith-based organizations, universities, research centers, and civil society groups as full partners in the process of problem-solving. In Africa, the three-year-old Liberalizing Innovation Opportunity Nations Partnership, or Lions at Africa, mobilizes the knowledge, expertise, and resources of leading public and private institutions to encourage and enhance technology and innovation by investing in capacity building for startups, providing access to capital, promoting connectivity with global markets, and raising the credibility of the startup culture. Some 2,000 entrepreneurs have participated in Lions at Africa-supported capacity-building activities. Over 80 startups were launched at Demo Africa, a signature annual event, and raised more than $10 million in capital financing to date. In 2013, five Lions innovators won opportunities to present their ideas at the main demo event in the United States High-Tech Center, Silicon Valley. Over 30 Lions won opportunities to compete in South Africa at a global pitch event for leading international investors. And 80 children are participating in pilot Africoder Dojo programs in Nigeria and Tanzania that provide free computer coding sessions and mentoring to young people. Many more coding clubs are planned across the continent. As with our nation's public-private partnership efforts in other parts of the world, Lions at Africa leverages the financial and in-kind resources of both the public and private sectors. It brings together leading IT companies, international development organizations, technology associations, and startup accelerators and incubators across the African continent to develop flagship programs and initiatives that deliver widespread results.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we continue in-depth election coverage as part of Voice of America's Nigeria Decides 2015 special programming. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests as they give post-election analysis on the major issues surrounding the vote and its leader for the next 4 years. That's next time on VOA Africa.